here we go. Let us see if we can establish communication. Gordon Michael Scallion, are you there? Well, as usual, hold on, Gordon. Let me put you over here, as usual. All right, now let us try it. Gordon, are you there?
Good morning, Art.
Good morning and welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Gordon, you are way back. You're in New Hampshire, right?
Yes, we're the opposite part of the country from where you are.
Exactly.
We're about less than 100 miles from, about 100 miles from the coast.
By the way, I'm flattered. You're a ham radio operator, and so am I. And earlier in the day when we talked, you told me you heard me on 75... On
85.
Right.
75
meter band.
Correct.
And you heard me all the way back there in New Hampshire.
Correct. So I was quite surprised, and it was very clear. And in fact, in a couple of weeks, when next time you do that, I'm going to attempt to join you.
Oh, now that'll be fun. And there'll be a lot of people looking forward to that. All right, Gordon. I'm not sure where we begin, but I guess at the beginning. There are a lot of new radio stations out there. They don't know who you are and why you can do what you can do. So I guess, in the way you want to lay it out, how in the world did all of this happen to you? I mean, how did it come to the point where you could begin to see things, visions? Begin at the beginning.
The beginning was 1979. I was living in Florida, and at the time I was living on a 30-foot sailing sloop. And my vocation at that time was communications and electronics, and I was heavily into video and satellite communications, and acted much as a consultant, and was able to do a lot of sailing and then come ashore and work for a few months. And I thought my life was probably as perfect as you can get it.
It does sound nice.
Yeah. It was on the Gulf Coast of Florida, and
you were,
everything about it was wonderful.
And you were in business. I mean, you were regular business. What kind of work?
The business was consulting, but my background is electronics, and so I acted in the sense of helping people design satellite uplink systems and video systems, educational applications. So most of it was technical in nature, and it was also showing people how they can use video, which was just starting to come in a large way at that time, how they could use it for educational purposes. So it was perhaps 50% technical, and the other 50% was just finding applications for the technology.
Fascinating.
So it was very, very, very linear world kind of a job.
Sure, real world job. And in that regard, our lives, your life and my life, have so many parallels, it's striking in our early life. But then at some point, and I'm remembering vaguely this story, but you were in the middle of cutting some kind of big business deal, all right? And you were giving an address to a group of businessmen.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where it all began, huh?
It began at a meeting. I used to work very, very hard for short periods of time trying to put together packages for schools in particular. This one was a school. And then the package would make me enough money where I could afford to then just go sailing for 6 months. So I would work around the clock very hard for 3 to 4 months, and then go sailing for as long as the money would last me. And in the process of a presentation, and the deal was well over $250,000 of sales, of which a very large percentage would have gone to me.
And so it's important that people understand, here you were in right in the middle of something that would have made you a lot of money, put you back sailing where you wanted to be for a long time. So your motivation would have been to finish it big time.
Finish it and then load up with the sail load up and just head off to the Tortugas or somewhere in the islands. And in the middle of the presentation, just at the point where I was starting to get down to the final part of the presentation, and by the way, this was a shoe-in kind of a presentation. It was a foregone conclusion. I had solved the problems, and it was just a formality. But in the middle of it, I lost my voice. It didn't crack. It didn't didn't go erratic. It simply
it didn't get hoarse the way you do when you get a very bad cold or something like that. It truly, actually stopped.
It was like someone had removed my larynx from my throat.
Could you even whisper?
No, it was you could. I couldn't even make a guttural sound or anything at all. Trying to bring up, I can remember trying to force air from my lungs up just so I could, I mean, I could. It seems like I could almost cough, but I couldn't get any kind of a sound out whatsoever.
So obviously,
but there was no, I should also say there was no pain. I had absolutely no pain or no discomfort.
So obviously, the people there would have thought this guy's having a stroke, probably, or a heart attack, possibly, or something. And so, I mean, what happened? You stood there on the podium and you couldn't make a sound. And what happened?
The person I was making the presentation to couldn't deal with it. He had recently gone through a problem in his family with a stroke. Relative had a stroke, and that relative was exhibiting some of the same symptoms. So he immediately said, let me call the hospital, let me call the ambulance, and
sure.
And I was making him more nervous because I was going into some kind of a mental shock, not a physical one. I just couldn't understand it. So it got to the point after like a few minutes where he did pick up the phone and he called. He made a call to the emergency rescue, and I told him, I ended up writing a note back and just try to calm him down. And I ended up at the hospital.
You were probably having a panic attack as well. What's
yeah,
known as, increased heart rate, cold and clammy, sweating, other symptoms, it would have scared the hell out of me, and so that would have been, I'm sure, my response.
I don't recall all the symptoms of the time. I remember the panic at this stage, and I remember the fact that the thoughts in my mind was, is this a stroke? I mean, I had no physical problems while I was there, so it wasn't like I had any kind of a known condition in the past. It was totally unknown to me. So I went into the hospital, and by the time maybe an hour had gone by, and I was still in the same state, and they immediately had a doctor come in. Intern came in first, and a doctor came in, and he did the eyes, ears, nose, and throat examination, and looked at me, and did some other kind of measurements, the normal workup that they do, and he would talk to me, and then I would write on a pad, answers to his questions. And he said, at the time, he said, we're going to have to do some studies on you. He says, I don't see anything at this stage, he says, that indicates anything. So I believe they did an EKG and some other kind of monitoring work.
Mm-hmm.
And so he put me in an end of a ward, I think, which was like an intensive ward. He put me in a room, and he said, we're just going to have to monitor you, and we're going to have to do some tests in the morning. And he said, but, he was trying to calm me down and saying that I don't see anything that's coming up here. And he kept asking me the same period of questions. He kept saying, is there anything stressful in your life now? Is there, are you on any kind of medication? Are you on any drugs?
Well, in a way, you did have stress, or maybe you didn't regard it as stress, but you were giving a very, very important presentation. That is stress.
Well, he was, I'm sure I was stressful when I first came in, when I first met him. A half hour later or an hour later, I was less stressful, and I think I was, at this point, probably a lot of fear and
sure.
And really feeling scared. And I can remember the thoughts were that this must be some kind, it's either a stroke that I'm having of some type, or if it's not that, it's somehow I've just gone over the edge. I must have been suppressing something. I mean, I can remember the laundry list of things that went through my mind at the time.
Well, I would think if you couldn't speak, if no sounds would come out, the last thing you would suspect would be mental, because it would seem absolutely physical, whether or not it was mental. It would certainly seem physical. So, they did the test. They didn't find anything. I guess then what? They slammed you in the hospital for observation.
They hooked me up, put a couple of IVs in each arm, put some kind of a monitor on me, and set me up in a bed, and turned the TV on. And so it was there, and so I was being monitored. I had these two IVs attached to either arm on either side of the bed, and some other cables on me. And you know, by this time it's probably 11 o'clock or so, p.m. in the evening, mm-hmm. and I'm just sitting up in bed, and I don't think I thought that I was having. I mean, it wasn't an original thought that I was going off the deep end until the doctor actually started asking questions about my background, my family, and whether or not I've ever had depression, and you know, and all these questions, you know.
Was there anything in your earlier life?
No, I haven't, and not that I'm aware of. I mean, it wasn't anything that I was consciously aware of.
Okay.
So I would have to say no.
All right. So then they begin asking you questions. They're trying to figure out what's wrong, ranging from the physical to the mental. Nothing seems to be showing up. I mean, there you are. You're in the hospital, yeah. And there's no cause.
And at this time, everybody has left. So I'm in this room by myself. You know, they've done all the questions. They've left, and in the morning, they're going to do a series of tests. They're going to do whatever. And I have absolutely no idea what they're going to do other than he said they're going to do a lot of tests, and he mentions a couple of doctors' names that he'll call in to that I'll meet. Still not knowing who these people are or what they're going to do.
Sure.
And then I remember, you know, the news was on 11 p.m., and it was at that moment that phenomena started occurring. So the first thing that occurred is that I started observing light. They were more of a purple, glowish light that seemed to be coming from outside of the hallway. The doors had swinging doors with glass windows. And I started to observe it, and at first I looked at it, and I thought that maybe it was some kind of equipment that they had out in the hallway that they were doing, and it was just light reflecting. And so I continued watching the news, and I was making notes, trying to figure out. In fact, I think I began to try to compose a letter to the client just to apologize for what was going on. So that was one of the things I had started. Had in pencil there, and which I had been using for notes.
Sure.
And then so I didn't pay too much attention, and then a few minutes later, I observed that this light was had entered into the room, and it was at the bottom of the room. And I looked down at the floor to see if it was coming underneath the swinging doors. And as I looked down, the room filled up with light, this purple light.
Now, that's where I want to stop you and ask you: when you say it filled up with light, was it emanating from an identifiable source, or was it scattered general light covering the whole room?
It seemed like the sphere that I saw.
Sphere.
It seemed like it was a small sphere, probably the size of a grapefruit at first, at the end of the room near the door, which again I thought it was light coming underneath the door, and then the sphere was at the end of the bed, probably a foot or two from the end of the bed, just this sphere, and from that sphere, rays of purple, violet, indigo colors, mostly in that spectrum, and they were like shafts of light that came out. And as they came out, it was almost like a mist that filled the room. So, I could look around, and even at this stage, I'm still thinking that it's something. You know, my technical mind is thinking that this is something. Technical is going on, and you know, I've been sailing. I have seen what they call ball lightning. I've had that experience on my sailboat.
Sure.
Especially, you know, in strong electrical storms, I've seen stuff hit my my mast and come down my spreaders. So I've seen that, and it was very similar to that. And I said, you know, I couldn't figure out how it could be, but that's where my mindset was.
Maybe
was,
from a, you know, something the hospital was doing. I could imagine that. You could imagine that. Sure.
Yeah. A few minutes passed by, and I just kind of was observing it. At this stage, I was nervous, but I wasn't panicky. But I was nervous. It was just this kind of mist. The next thing that happened is that where the mist had been created in the room, all of a sudden symbols seemed to float. It was like, would be like balloons floating in the air, and on these balloons would be symbols. And some of these symbols were symbols of like pyramids, and some of these were really strange language, similar to hieroglyphic, but much different. And they were just floating. And then a series of shafts of light seemed to disappear beneath the floor and go up to the ceiling. And at this time, I began to lose it. I really began to believe.
I was about to say, I'd freak out at that point.
At this stage, I'm remembering why he's asking me these questions, and I'm thinking these doctors he wants me to see tomorrow, our psychiatrist, and they're going to commit me. And I really start to lose it. And I back up into the bed. I dig my heels in, and I can remember I moved so abruptly that the two IV bottles that were in my arms began to sway back and forth. And so I reached to grab one so it didn't fall on the floor. It was just like a reaction. And I'm still, my head is swinging around looking at it because it's a kaleidoscope of colors and images and symbols and rainbows of colors. And as I move to grab one IV bottle, the other one starts to swing. And they're pulling at my arm. And then I reach down for the nurse call button that was clipped on the edge of the bed.
Right.
And when I had reached over to get that bottle, I had jerked so hard that I had dislodged a pillow and the nurse call button. So the nurse call button cable is now down on the floor. The two IV bottles are swinging back and forth, and these symbols now are just filling the room, and they seem to be moving closer to me. They're still pretty much at a perimeter around the bed, at the end of the bed, but they're not close to me. They're still like 6 feet away.
You remember all this, Gordon, in such remarkable detail. Did you have to sit down and reconstruct this, or is this one of those things that, as it occurred, was being indelibly imprinted on your mind?
Yeah, I think of any experience in my life, this is the one that I have recalled so many times. It was the closest thing that I've ever experienced to actually shock, and I realized that. Later, the next day, the greatest thing I was fearful of is that it wasn't a phenomena. It wasn't that I was seeing phenomena that was bothering me as much as I felt that my God, I really have lost it. This is what mental illness is like.
All this seems so logical, and I would think exactly the same things. Sure, I'd think I was losing it. And after all, you'd lost your voice. They were asking you questions that meant they considered there was a psychological problem of some sort there. And so this would just add to that, plus it would frighten you terribly. So there are the symbols. It's still going on. I didn't mean to stop your story.
No.
It's just that you had it in such great detail that I was wondering how that happened, whether you remembered later or it just was there.
It was there, and it's like an instant recall. I can place myself back there. Since that day, if someone was to ask me about an event, the most important event in my life, for example, that had happened a year before or 5 years before, I would have some difficulty recalling events prior to that day. It would be vague. I mean, it would be like, yeah, I did have the sailboat, and yeah, I did go sailing, and I went here. But the imagery would be very vague.
Just before, we're coming to the bottom of the hour very quickly. But before we continue the story, I want to ask you this. As you think back on it now, did it seem to happen in real linear time, or when you think back on it, did it seem like a slow motion thing?
There was absolutely no awareness of time. The only realization that I had at all was that the images went from the symbols. Within an instant, they all evaporated.
All right, hold it right there. They all evaporated. We'll pick up right at that point when we come back, which we will. Gordon Michael Scallion, once again. Gordon, so there we are. The images, what did they do? Did they flicker out or just... like somebody threw a switch?
It was like a switch. It the mist and all the symbols that were floating immediately grew back into the sphere. And the sphere then grew to about the size of a basketball. Again, it was a purple. All kinds of golden sparks were emanating from it. And it seemed to have a slight motion to it as far as rotating. And that sphere moved from where it was several feet from the end of my bed and moved onto the bed about 2 or 3 feet above my feet and slowly started moving towards me. Mm-hmm. And then once again, I really dug in. I dug my heels in and just threw back, and the IV bottles once more began to swing. And I can remember trying to scream, having totally forgotten why I was even in the hospital. I could just remember just trying to scream, and nothing came out.
I think a kid would have gone under the covers. something happened like that to me, I'd pull the covers over me.
And then inside of the sphere, a figure started to appear. And then for some strange reason, and I can remember this part probably more so than any other part of it, is that a calmness came over me. I can just remember that there was a calmness coming over me. And I can remember that there was a thought in my head at that time, because right after this experience, I wrote down some notes of what I was experiencing, because I figured I'm going to see the doctor in the morning, and I've got to, maybe it'll help him fix me. Mm-hmm. I tell him, you know, what I was experiencing. But I had this calmness, and I saw a woman's face begin to appear in the sphere. And I said, I know what this is. I said, I've got it. It's these IV bottles, the two IVs. I'm having some kind of a drug reaction.
Sure.
To this. And this is what it is. And then I became even calmer. And I said, wow, this is an interesting trip. And I can remember actually just getting into it. Now, whether that was, you know, my subconscious mind way of dealing with shock, of just trying to convince myself it was something else, I really don't know. I just know that this image appeared, and it became the sphere became a woman's, just her head, and it was a woman who was, I've never seen before, I haven't seen since. Probably reminded me of what we see for a school teacher, you know, your kindergartner, first grade school teacher that might have been in the 40s or 50s.
Yes.
Reminded me of that, had the silver gray hair, and I remember the hazel colored eyes and the higher cheekbones, and she had this the kind of a face that was like a teacher, somebody who you would pay attention to, and her lips were moving, and I could hear her in my head, but not with my ears, and it took me a few seconds to realize what that was going on. And then I would flash back between, boy, these IVs, the drugs in here really, really cause you to hallucinate. And then she proceeded to tell me that that there was going to be great changes in my life and in the world, and that I should remember the things that she was telling me, and proceeded to tell me about some things that were going to happen regarding natural disasters. And in the process of that, she would show me, she would say, now look, and then as I was looking at the sphere, I would be looking at the world from a high altitude, looking down at the world.
Right.
And she said, I want you to watch these changes in the world. And I would watch the United States, just its landmass changing. And then she said, now I want you to watch this. And so there was a series of these images that lasted, I know exactly how long it lasted, because this started a little after 11, and I remember the last image ended just as I heard Ed McMahon say, and here's Johnny. And so I knew that, you know...
11:30.
It was 11:30.
Yeah.
And then after she showed those things, it immediately the sphere just went away. And then I was back. The room was back to normal. The television set was on. And I jotted down, you know, as much as I could recall at that time of what she had said.
All right, two questions, quick ones at this point. Who do you think she was?
To this date, I have beaten that horse to a pulp.
I'm sure.
I still do not know. my current theory is that it was something that I created in my in my subconscious, the superconscious mind, to open me up or to just get my attention.
To throw some kind of switch.
Yeah. But I don't know. I've thought, is this a discarnate spirit that came to guide me? Is this somebody who came to warn me about something? But the things that she was saying really scared me. I mean, the things she was showing me and telling me really, really disturbed me. And
well, are these things that you likely would have conjured up yourself under any other circumstance, Michael?
I don't think so. I think if I was going to conjure up anything, it might be, a destructive thing for me would be, I'd be out sailing and I hit a bad storm, which, I did sail through a tropical storm once with hurricane velocity winds, and I know what that was like. That might be, something that would
sure.
be terrifying for me. But at this stage, my total interest was in sailing and in business. It had nothing. I had no interest in anything else. I mean, that wasn't part of my mindset.
All right. Well, I guess the next thing is you were shown these things, so you would be sitting there asking yourself, like the guy in the movie Oh God, why me? Why me? What conclusions have you come to there? In other words, George Burns, I think it was, kept asking, why me? Why would God pick me to bring a message? Why would anybody, an entity, or even something that's been activated in you, why you, Gordon?
At that time, and for several years after that time, a couple of years after, that was never a part of my thought process. My thought process at that time and shortly thereafter had more to do with what was wrong in my life. You know, what did I was not seeing this as prophetic visions. Everything I saw scared me, because the next day when they came to wake me up in the morning and have my test, my voice came back to normal. It was back to normal, and then it started. You need to see this doctor. And the doctor was going through the questions. Do you have any mental illness in your family? Are
sure.
you stressed? And
did you hate your father?
Yeah, and all that. Yeah. So the whole thing was that. I was really back and I also remember, because my childhood until probably age of 14 or 15, like many people, was very strong Catholicism. Mass was a daily experience for me, and religious instructions Monday through Friday was a normal thing for me. And so the only thing I could imagine was that this was something
religious.
This was the devil, or this was a possession of some type.
It's interesting. Just let me note here, Gordon, people with religious backgrounds who see UFOs or have some sort of paranormal experience almost always take it as a religious experience, don't they?
Many of the people that have shared their experiences with me share a very similar, and this is from all doctrines, whether it's Buddhism or Judaism, it doesn't matter. But you're right, they do seem to have, in some point in their life, they've been exposed to it in some fashion.
I take it, Gordon, you don't rule that out.
No. At this stage, there were times in 1982, 85 again, 87, where I said, okay, I figured it out. This is what it is. And then all of a sudden, another experience in my life would happen, and I would say, no, it's not that.
Mm-hmm.
I'd have to say, and I've had literally tens of thousands of visions since then, that I probably know less about the mechanism today than I did back then.
Well,
I just don't know.
Okay, the progression then was to healing. And if you would again tell that story, I guess is that the first thing, other than the initial visions that were shown to you, that began to manifest itself after all of this ability to seemingly to diagnose or heal?
Yeah, for the very next day was probably my first experience with healing, though I didn't know it for several months. And that's when I left the hospital. I saw a man who was going into the hospital, obviously for some kind of treatment, and a man was standing outside, who had a dog. I remember it was an Irish setter dog. And I remember seeing colors around the man that were very muted colors, very very muted, and not a lot of life around these colors. And yet the dog was full of bright colors, and his owner, I remember, was full of bright colors, and I said, my God, I lost my voice, and now I'm losing my vision.
Mm.
So that was the first kind of, you know, thing that indicated to me that there was something else, and I learned a couple of years later that when that ability was there all the time, it wasn't there now and then. Like, the visions would come and go, but the ability to see auras happened at that time and just stayed. And after a period of time, I learned what that was about, and that my very first experience with all of the phenomena that was going on was with healing.
How did you begin to relate auras that you would see, or things that you were able to diagnose? In other words, that ability that now apparently existed in you, how, other than what, you know, at the hospital, how did you start to put it all together?
It took about 2 years for me to really begin to explore it, because up to that time, I was spending most of my time with therapists trying to figure out what was wrong with me, and I wasn't, and most therapy tends to keep you going for a long time period.
Oh yes.
And so nobody was even addressing the possibility that there was a prophetic thing to this. I had no thoughts at all about that. But I did observe the differences in the colors, and I went into denial from 79 and through 81. I was in a total state of denial. I would literally, pray that these visions would go away, because I felt that there was something really wrong with me.
Of course.
Eventually, what happened is that someone appeared at my doorstep, said that they had been sent to see me, and that they heard that that I had the ability to see the life force in people, and that I had the
yes.
ability to heal, and that they needed some help. These were gentlemen. They were elderly gentlemen, but they were dressed in suits, and I kept asking them, who told you this? You know, because I, at this stage, I hadn't told anybody. In fact, it wasn't until the past couple of years that I really was willing to go public with any of this. As it turns out, while they were there with me, I was able to, by a prodding from him, I was able to diagnose a problem. And I don't know how I did it. He said, well, just tell me what's wrong. We know you could do it. And I remember saying what the problem was. And then after, asked me more questions about it, and he says, just share whatever comes to you. He just kept saying, just share whatever comes to you. And finally, I just turned to these gentlemen. I said, you don't need somebody like me. What you really, you need a doctor. You need somebody who knows what they're doing. And
right.
then one of these gentlemen looked at me and smiled. And he said, I am a doctor.
Uh-huh.
And as it turns out, they were one was a doctor and one was his friend, his lifelong friend. And he couldn't help his friend who was dying. And it turned out to be a mercury poisoning problem that was affecting some parts of the system. And
you told him that?
And I told him that, and then I also described how it happened, and then he says, that's true. I worked in a dental laboratory for 30 years, and then we, with some pride, and I said, this is the things I see, and then he went. And,
okay, Yvonne, just one sec. Let me stop you and ask you, that's something pretty specific to see, that somebody is dying of mercury poisoning and the circumstances that brought it on. And so my question is, in what manner did that come to you? Was that a vision? Was that just a mental, a mental conclusion? You thought about it for a moment?
No, it was that as he pressed hard with me, visions started to... And it was very similar to the visions that I was seeing visions since the night I lost my voice. The visions would occur once a week, once a day. I never knew when they were going to occur. It was the same kind of a vision, except this vision was very specific to him. Most of the visions I was seeing, I had no idea what they were. They were just ancient cities and future cities, and I just didn't know what I was seeing. In this particular case, it was related directly to him, and I would just say, this is what I see. And then he would ask me a question, and then I would see a part of a vision about, I would see some herbs, for example, or something, and then I would see, and I would just say, well, I'm seeing some herbs, and I see the name on their bottle, and I'm And then I would just say this and this and this, and then occasionally I would say things that wasn't, that I couldn't possibly know from the vision. Like the vision might show me something, for example, like the herbs, and then I would say, you need to take this and you need to grind this up and you need to make a poultice out of this and mix this with this.
Wow.
And that, and so I don't know how that part of it came out, but he knew. I mean, he knew and he did it, and they left, and then I saw him again about 2 or 3 months later. They stopped by, and I immediately noticed the difference in his aura at that time. And he came in, and I remember joking. I remember saying, looks like he decided to stay, is what I said to him. and that started the healing process for me, which lasted up until 1991. And at that time, all of the healing work that I had done from 82 to 91 stopped. It just stopped abruptly.
But the word kind of got out, I guess, somehow or another, underground or above ground, and you might be able to tell me, that you had this power, and people, I'm sure, began coming to you. And during that period of time, how did you handle that? What did you do?
We started to see people, and people, you know, started sending other people, and I felt that as long as... you know, as long as this thing was fairly quiet, you know, and there wasn't a lot of fanfare with it, that I would continue with it if it was helping people.
Mm-hmm.
And it also was helping me, because what it was saying is that this thing that I was seeing as a negative thing maybe isn't negative after all.
Had positive applications.
Yeah, and so I immediately changed a lot of my religious thoughts and beliefs about negativity. It just kind of vanished, because We literally saw thousands of people, thousands of them, and perhaps two thirds of them we were able to help and improve their life, and some actually not only prolong their lives but probably save their lives. And about a third were not successful for one reason or another. I have some viewpoints on why that was, but. So anyways, it changed. I then started looking at things and saying, this is not a curse. This maybe can be a blessing, and I just need to develop it. I need
a
to
gift.
Learn how to work with it.
Sure, a gift. And so that continued, and you saw people, and you helped people, and you had about a two-thirds hit record until what year?
This went through to 91, and then everything changed in 1991.
Everything changed in 1991. All right, we're very nearly at the top of the hour, and we've just managed to cover the right amount of territory in this first hour. Very, very necessary for people to hear this, so that they might understand what they are yet to hear. Gordon, a quick question: there are a lot of prophets in this country, or people who would be prophets, and yet you are easily the most highly regarded, the modern-day Edgar Cayce. Why? Why do you think that's true?
I think that, first of all, I believe that there are many highly qualified sensitives and intuitives out there, and business people in particular just naturally have a high level of ESP and intuition. I think that because of the experience that I had, it was so traumatic in my life, and what I saw, I think I reached a point in place in my life where I was willing to risk and put it on the line. I've received literally hundreds, if not thousands, of letters from other futurists and geologist.
All right, we've got to hold it there. We'll be right back. Gordon Michael Scallion is my guest.
Call Art Bell toll-free, west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies at 1-800-825-5033. 1-800-825-5033. This is the CBC Radio Network.
It is. My guest is Gordon Michael Scallion. He is, to me, the most credible person doing the kinds of things that he does. And by the way, his hit record, his accuracy record, I think backs up that contention. We're still in the middle of finding out how he does what he does, and we'll do a bit more of that. But then we are going to get into a predictive portion of the show, and when that occurs, I would like to, and I am right now going to warn you as strongly as I can, you're hearing prophecy. Some of it is, to many people, going to be very frightening. To children, it would be frightening. Please get children away from the radio. Those of you who are frightened by this kind of thing are enjoined to tune out now. And we'll get back to Gordon Michael Scallion in a moment. Okay, once again, the guy that I would call the real thing, Gordon Michael Scallion, is with us. And Gordon, so let's take it from the stage. You had the power to heal. You don't have that now, do you?
I'm not sure I ever had the power to heal, but I did have the power to diagnose. And to give alternative remedies for treatment. That went away, and when that went away, it was replaced by some new things. And that was that the visions in 91, instead of seeing people in the auras around people or animals, I began to see the aura on the earth. Sometimes it was a vision looking down at the earth. If I was taking a flight anywhere and I could look down, as I could see it from above, when I got closer, I would see different energy patterns on the earth, different colors.
Wow.
It was a kaleidoscope.
Almost like satellite imagery.
Yes, actually excellent example of that. It's like infrared, but full body color. And interestingly, the colors were very similar in different places. Whenever I saw oceans, the colors around oceans reminded me so much of when I would see the blood in people's bodies. I mean, sometimes the imagery was so similar. And when I would see certain areas of landmass, whenever I would see blockages, for example, in people's arteries and things, I would see the same kind of things, same kind of colors. So it was almost as if the earth became human, and my personal belief is that the earth is a sentient being, and because my experiences and my correlations with it were too exact,
Do you think
have to be very exact.
Without reference to what has given you this power, do you think that the time that you could diagnose people by reading, in effect, auras and having some visions was training so that you could be, in effect, switched over and begin to look at the earth as you looked at people, sort of a way to bring you into it so you could understand it?
I believe that that's exactly what I have been preparing for. Never knew it, never. The whole journey was like an e-ride at Disney World. And so each day was a new experience, and it continues to be. And so I never was really able to project where it was going. I was spending so much time figuring out where I've just come from. But it clearly was doing that, and then I began to understand a lot more of why it was happening to me and what the purpose of it was. That was the most important thing. I was searching for purpose.
Sure, of course. When did the specific visions begin? I mean, you go from being able to observe the earth as an almost living entity, aura-wise, to then real and very sharp visions.
A lot of the imagery that I saw in the hospital were little vignettes of what I was seeing.
Yes.
So what I learned is what happened in the hospital in that half-hour experience was like a time capsule of my life. It was little flashing vignettes of things that I was going to experience in my life. And as these events happen, I flash back to the hospital and I say, there was a piece of it there. So it was almost like a time stream shift that occurred for me in the hospital. And then in 91, when the visions really began to focus exclusively on the Earth, the details became, you know, very specific. I began to understand why certain storms were going to hit certain areas, or why a quake would hit in a particular area. I began to understand more about it by just studying it and looking at it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I learned that if visions repeated themselves, it was because I hadn't gotten it yet. In other words, the messages were coming through, but I wasn't getting it. So the vision would repeat itself until I clearly got it.
Until you got it. You once described to me, I think in the last interview, that your visions are, you could almost describe it as three video presentations at one time, with one of the video presentations being more clearly defined than the others. Is that, use
yes,
your words.
There'll be three different screens, usually. Typically, the Earth was, in 91, the Earth was being shown in three screens, and then about a month or two ago, I only now see two screens when I look at the Earth. But the brightest and most colorful screen, I learned what that meant was that was the probable reality. This is probably what's going to happen. It was like very strong that it would happen. The second vision would have colors, but it would be somewhat muted, and it'd be the same scene, but the scene would look different. One scene, for example, might show a tree blossoming, and the second scene might show that tree being hit by lightning, and then the third scene might show that same ground, but it'd be all barren.
Oh, that's fascinating.
And so I've learned that what these are the probable realities. And that's when I learned early that when I was seeing things for people in the healing modality, in about a third of the cases, I felt that I was totally off base, I was wrong, I misread it, I didn't understand the vision because nothing had changed. But I have since realized is that there's this thing called free will, and that we can always be told things that we should do, but how many of us really do all the things we should do right? And that these visions were showing me was these are the possible outcomes.
Early on, when you begin to have those kinds of visions, now, obviously, or I would imagine at that time, you didn't go public. You probably watched the visions. And did you begin to keep score in your own mind? In other words, as you saw these things either occur or not occur, you must have been kind of keeping score and trying to figure out in your own mind what the right thing to look at was.
When I was doing individuals, I was keenly aware of imagery because, for example, I would see three screens on a person. It might be showing some kind of a unbalance in a person.
Yes.
And if I saw that person 6 months later, the amazing thing to me was that whatever discussion we had 6 months before would be an instant recall, and I would look at the screens again, and many times the screens would change. In other words, the screen that was the most probable one, which indicated that somebody was going to, be disabled, all of a sudden changed, and that one became a gray screen, and then their vitality was healthy. So I watched the screens change, and so that told me that there's no such thing as that everything is going to happen, that there is always that possibility of free will, that we can change our destiny, change our path if we choose.
Well, just as a matter of curiosity, at what percentage of the time would you say that what you consider to be the most probable reality based on what you were seeing changed to something else? I mean, was it more often than not, or?
About two-thirds of the cases that we worked on, we saw improvement. And in about a third of the cases, we saw absolutely nothing at all. I mean,
in other words, what you had seen as the worst case scenario manifested.
Right.
Has that, with regard to the Earth changes that you've seen, how's the batting average there so far regarding the most probable outcome and what seems to be occurring, Gordon?
It's changed significantly since 91, when all this changed. Part of it is, I think, because I'm totally focused in one area now, because when other things the personal healing stopped and focused into the earth, obviously became more aware. But I noticed a big shift in the year 1987, because even in the 80s, I was seeing visions of the earth, but they were scattered visions. They would come now and then, and I would, in 1982, I actually saw what the United States would look like at the turn of the century. And I sketched out and actually made a map in 1982, and it was so far-fetched that even I didn't believe it, and the reaction to people who I shared it with was so negative that I just withdrew it, and I said, well, this is no place to spend my energy.
Is that the map you now call the Earth Changes map?
Yes.
It is. So you just, you sort of put it away. I could understand how it would totally freak people out, and they would not react positively to it. Can you describe briefly what that map looks like? Now, we'll tell everybody how they could get this map and your materials later, but I mean, can you give us a sort of a little thumbnail sketch vocally of what that map looks like?
Yeah, sure. Let me just add a little detail here for your listeners so they can have another point of reference.
Mm-hmm.
The visions that I received in 79 showed the United States what it would look like in the year 2000, and it was kind of a general sketch. Since that time, I have seen that vision thousands of times, literally, and each time it hasn't changed dramatically, but because I've seen it so often now, I'm able to draw some finer lines of what it looked like. And finally, in 1993, the visions, there were three screens up in the 80s. When I got to 87, there were only two screens.
Mm-hmm.
And then in 1993, there's only one screen. And what that tells me is that
our fate is sealed.
That we're fairly locked in a broad sense. Mm-hmm. And I say a broad sense because what I also see is around the country, I'm seeing lots of what I call gold aura colors. You know, if I'm looking from space down at the Earth, I can see these pockets of you know, they're small pockets, but they're pockets of gold energy. And what I have learned is that it's community being reborn. It's people who, through their rightful living, who are getting back to the Earth. They're cleaning up their environment. They're changing their lives. There's a lot of positive lights that I'm seeing, and in those areas is where I see potential for some light modification of this pattern. Having said that,
can you relate those golden aura areas to changes in the map?
I believe that they are. There's a variable in the map of about 50 to 100 miles of where these lines draw. Uh-huh. And I never could figure out, you know, what that variable was. And I realized more recently that it has to do with consciousness, how things are happening. There are many people who write me and say that these things aren't going to happen, or we can change all these things. And I would like to truly believe that. But I have also learned to be a true futurist, that I really need to share what I see and not candy coat it or modify it in any way, but simply to put it out what I see and let time and history be a judge of its value. It's a tough thing to do because my tendency is to want to heal everything and make everything right. What I am seeing currently is that these changes are set in motion, and that these little auras I see can modify these changes somewhat. And I do believe that we will see modifications of the map. What I would love to see is the whole map be totally modified. It would require such an incredible act now for that to happen. I would love nothing better than to wake up in the morning and see a vision where all of a sudden I see two screens again. Currently, that's not the case.
Has that ever happened, by the way? In other words, in your visions, have you ever had what is narrowed to one screen and something that is definitely going to occur split back into two?
No, I have never seen that. I haven't seen that in individuals, nor have I seen it in any of the maps that I've done or any of the geophysical changes that I've seen. I have not seen that. I do believe it is possible, though.
Well, I guess ever hopeful, huh?
Right.
All right. What are you seeing on the one screen, Gordon?
Okay. The screen shows a series of changes to the United States that begin with the West Coast. In our original map that we published, we stated that the first phase is three quakes that would occur northeast of Los Angeles. And we forecasted that those things would occur in April of 92 and then again in June of 92.
Mm-hmm.
And the magnitudes would be 6 and 7. And those things did come to pass. And then the third one has not occurred yet. I felt for a while that Northridge, we knew and we had forecast that a quake was going to occur in January.
Yes.
But it did not occur in the epicenter area that I had forecast, which the next major quake I see is in California in the Palm Springs area. Originally it was about a 100-mile radius, and I now feel it a little tighter. I see it about a 50-mile radius of Palm Springs.
That close?
Yeah, and I think we'll see a magnitude that'll be greater than 8. So that would fulfill that part of the prophecy, that there would be three quakes in that area and those specific magnitudes. When those happen, when that completes its cycle, it then establishes a benchmark for other things to happen. One of the most difficult things with forecasters, whether it's a financial forecaster or any type of forecasting, is time.
Sure.
And so, you know, if we're into financial matters, we buy all the newsletters and we try to figure out who has a track on what's going to happen and when is gold going to go up and when is silver going to go up and so forth and so on.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a difficult thing to do, reading a vision and trying to interpret it. We've had some success at what we do here, and we've had some failures at it. The failures usually are that the event occurs either earlier or later than we forecast.
Mm-hmm.
It's a rarity where the event does not occur.
As a general rule, and I'm sure there's a lot of people across the country, Gordon, that keep track of your accuracy record, what percentage of the time on these calls that you publish, which must be the ones you feel surest of, what's your percentage of accuracy?
It varies. We publish it each issue. Each year in January, I publish my major forecast for the year.
Mm-hmm.
And then in February, we do a synopsis of what we said from the year before. And so we say, these are the ones that we were right, these are the ones we were wrong, and these are the ones that we can't tell.
All right, so...
And based on that, we, as an average, if we look at the past, let's say, since we've been publishing, since 91.
Yes, sir.
We find that out of every 100, anywhere between 79 and 87 out of 100 occur.
All right, that's exactly where we're going to stop, and that will set up what you're about to hear. Good morning. Gordon Michael Scallion is here. This is CBC.
Art Bell is taking calls on the Wildcard Line at 702-727-1295. That's 702-727-1295. First-time callers can reach Art Bell at 702-727-1222. 702-727-1222. Now, here again, Art Bell.
What you're about to hear may scare you. If it's going to scare you, if you think it's going to scare you, now would be the time to turn off the radio. You're listening to Prophecy. I think he's the best. He's Gordon Michael Scallion. Now, Gordon, I'm going to take you off course for just a moment because there's a little bit of breaking news. A few days ago, Gordon, in China, there was an ABC Associated Press report that there were hailstones, Gordon, the size of basketballs. They actually measured them and weighed them, and they were 33 pounds in size. Then there was a report of softball size hail down in Texas that ran for a couple of days. Remarkable hail. Did tremendous damage. And now I got a fax 2 minutes ago that says, killer hail. Yikes. ABC News at the top of the hour reported a killer storm in northern Texas. Listen to this. Hail smashed windshields and crashed through roofs as people fled in panic for shelter. Two people are dead, many injured, and great property damage. That's from John in Corvallis, Oregon. And so I can't hold this question off. What the hell's going on, Gordon?
Yeah, this is this is saddening because the China and the Texas events. We have a hotline where people can call and get the daily information and weekly information, and we reported those things. And it's part of a long range forecast. The cause of this change is the greatest trouble that we're going to experience in the next 5 years. Is going to be weather-related problems. When the major superquakes occur, that'll take hold. But those are like one event that happens.
Right.
But weather is going to be ongoing. And what's happened is that the mechanism that's driving all of these changes is due to a change internal to the Earth. The Earth's core itself, I believe, is shifting its position, and it's modifying weather patterns. I did a report several years ago that I believe that in the Pacific, especially around Easter Island, a large area of volcanism is occurring, and I believe that that's also what creates El Niños, and I believe it. Then that's one place in the world. There's another place in the Indian Ocean where I believe it's also occurring, not too far from Sri Lanka, in fact. And I think that those mechanisms are altering weather patterns. We're also seeing fluctuations in the magnetic field. We know that it's not stable. So these are the driving forces, and we're going to just see a lot more of this. This is not going to be a one-shot deal. We can expect to see this on a weekly basis from this time forward. There'll be some form of weather phenomena ongoing.
This is very serious stuff. I mean, I like everybody else, I watch the weather and I've listened to weather reports, and we have never in my experience, in my life, had these kinds of reports. 33-pound hail? That's biblical.
Yeah, this is phenomena that, which made it really difficult, not only for me, but for many people who were seeing visions like this and not having a reference point of seeing this kind of such dramatic changes. And it's hard, you know, if it was a storm, you know, and we've had hurricanes before.
Sure.
You know, you can understand that, but when you're seeing large sections of landmass actually breaking off, and you're seeing glaciers on the move, and we're seeing that the hailstorms that you're speaking of, these things are just way out of the normal. And what's happening, of course, is that what's out of the normal continues to become normal now.
Yes,
we're moving
yes.
more towards that.
Yes. This is the end of side one.
And this is going to turn to the social aspect for a second. But I've been using a term, Gordon, I watch the news very carefully. I talk about it every night here on the air, and we'll get to some contemporary news here shortly. But I feel, Gordon, a quickening of everything, of our social deterioration, of the events like the weather stuff we were just talking about. Almost in every aspect of human life, there's a kind of a quickening going on, and things are beginning to occur at a faster pace.
It's an exponential thing. It's my prophecies were that in 1990 that it would begin the cycle. Actually, 89 would begin the cycle, and that each year there would be about a magnitude 10 increase on various. Which I would call energy dynamics, that the reaction of the Earth, which is like a train pulling out of a station. It has a lot of weight to pull, and it chugs along, and it gets moving, and as it gets moving, it gets faster and faster and faster. So what you are referring to as the quickening, I refer to as a planetary energy release that's going on. And this release, you can't do anything in the physical earth without it affecting all of us. We're so tied into it. You know, I wish that everybody could see the colors that I see, because what you would see would be whatever colors we have on our body is on the earth, and you can see the direct relationship. We know, for example, that all of the minerals that we have on our body are found in the earth.
Yes.
And we can see so many correlations. The oceans at many times are very similar to the bloodstream, and we can see rivers as arteries, and the rainforest as the lungs of the earth. We can see these parallels, and it is moving very fast. And 1995 is what I would consider where the train has pulled out and is starting to gain speed. This is the year.
Yeah, there you are. It's easier for me to say the quickening.
Right.
Now, I want to get down to a few specifics, and then we'll get back to the general stuff, because I've got a lot to ask. Palm Springs. Where are we in the four-quake scenario? There was a recent 7 and then 6-point quake, I believe, in the Philippines, and we're all trying to... And there was another one previous to that in Japan... or off the coast, I'm sorry, of Japan. And so where are we in this cycle? And it will culminate, you feel, in Palm Springs, correct?
Correct. The scenario for people who are first-time listeners is that four quakes would occur in a serial. In a scenario, what I try to look for is early warning signs, things that we can, rather than say that this is going to happen in the States, I try to back up and look for other things that would warn us about these things. And what I find is that what I forecast earlier this year was that in January, February, a cycle would begin, and it would start in Japan, and then it would be followed by a quake within weeks rather than months in the Indian Ocean of South Pacific, and then within weeks rather than months again by another one in South America, and finally on the west coast of America. And the first cycle was that they would be magnitude 6.5. And the first cycle did occur, and it did complete itself. The last quake was 6.5 in Eureka, off Eureka.
Yes, sir.
And so that completed the cycle. Now, the next major cycle begins in May, June. That's the window that I believe it will begin in. And so we haven't, and this next cycle that I see is the magnitude will be greater than 7. Now, what has happened is that a smaller scenario has began earlier than I predicted. It actually started several weeks ago with Japan, as you stated. And the Philippines, of course, are being hit in the last few days.
Almost constantly.
Yeah. And so it doesn't fulfill the prediction because it doesn't have the right magnitude, which is that all the quakes would be greater than 7. However, that scenario is running right now. Even though they're lower in magnitude. Some of them got up to 7, but the Japan quake did not get up to 7. It was, I think, a little over 6. But I still would caution on
that's,
it.
In which case,
within a couple of weeks, we may very well see a quake in the West Coast. But I do want to state that the major four-quake scenario has not begun because we have not had a quake greater than 7 in Japan.
Let us discuss, then, when the major cycle... quakes of 7+ begin, what then will come? When it comes around and gets to the fourth event in California?
If it completes itself, if all four
yes.
aspects of the quake, let's say that there is a quake in the next 60 days in Japan that is greater than 7, and it completes itself and then it comes to the West Coast, then in Southern California is where I see the event occurring. And when it does occur, it would be a major quake.
In fact, the quake would be
reported as the big one that everybody's been waiting for.
And you have narrowed that area now. Again, repeat, please.
A 50-mile radius of Palm Springs.
50 miles. If a quake of an 8 magnitude, I believe you said, or greater.
8 or greater. Mm-hmm.
Hits there, and you believe that will occur in 95 sometime.
Right. I
know you're not an expert, but I know you talk to geologists. Briefly, how would that affect Los Angeles?
A quake of between 8 and 9, and the visions have shown me that that there will be quakes greater than 9. In fact, in the West Coast by 98, And that could happen any time from now in 1980. Even conventional geologists now are forecasting quakes this year.
And that, we ought to spend a second with that. It's true. You sent me a story, and so have several other people. Conventional geologists have begun to make predictions also about, I believe, this year. July.
It's a rarity because the conventional methodology for geology to forecast quakes is not their forte. Their forte is to study it, to understand it, and to give very wide berth. You know, 20, 30 years, something may happen because
right. We
tend to think of things over long time periods. But there are some geologists who are concerned now by the patterns because they're seeing their data that's indicating that something is happening. And more recently, geologist Charles Shamus is the one who's forecasting that a quake in the magnitude of 6.5 would occur in central California.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting that his window, based on his data, corresponds to the windows of my four quake scenario. And that was in February, and I believe it was July 9th, is when he forecast that this quake would occur.
Again,
that's based on his own data, which we really don't know what his data is.
And I take it they talk with you privately, even more openly.
There are, in 1991, no one would talk to me after we made some forecasts that did occur, a few. And now there are many, literally hundreds of them who I've spoken with. A lot of them are retired who no longer are dependent upon their jobs or their grants, and they can speak more freely.
I've talked to the USGS, and I've noticed the same thing. You can find retired geologists who will talk. The ones still involved in some way are very close-mouthed, and that, I guess, is understandable.
Sure.
But again, an 8-plus quake within 50 miles of Palm Springs, the effect on Los Angeles?
I'll tell you what I saw in my vision.
Thank you.
In fact, in the my next issue, the June issue of our monthly newsletter, I'm going to be discussing specifically this. And so it might be a good time after I share this that we let people know how they could find out more about that.
But all right.
The first thing that I see that happens is that it's a vertical thrust quake, very similar to Northridge. It runs or it tears the land for miles and miles. The first impact that I can actually hear and see in the vision is that I saw shuddering. It was almost like a shuddering, a calmness, and then I noticed that there was glitter in the streets, and I realized that it was glass that was totally covering automobiles that were parked in the city of Los Angeles. And I realized what had happened is that the glass windows had popped out of the skyscrapers and came crashing down, and it literally filled the streets. I then noticed that the big portions of the Imperial Valley literally were flooded. The water had come in. The landmass had shifted so significantly and cracked, the elevations had changed, and literally detoured water places around. There was I'm not sure if it was a secondary quake that happened later or after, but I observed, up in San Francisco, I observed the Golden Gate being damaged, and again, I wasn't sure from this vision whether it was as a result of this quake or whether there was one that followed it.
But you actually saw the Golden...
I actually saw the Golden Gate Bridge twisted like a pretzel.
My God.
And I saw Mill Valley and that whole region out there isolated. I saw a lot of just the infrastructure and a major dam totally leaking, breaking, and trying to relieve the water from damage. I'm not sure where that dam was, but I could see that part of the vision. I saw most of the highway, Route 5 in particular, broken up. It was totally impassable. And so then after the event ended, there was like a relief. Most people said, well, finally, you know, the big one has occurred. We can get on with our lives. and we can do a rebuilding program.
Of course.
And then the interesting thing is that I was out in California before the first quakes came and warned about them, and the response was not was not a positive one, and so I decided that probably wasn't what I should do. So I've decided not to return to the West Coast because I went there and I said what I had to say, and I figured that things just have to kind of move their own way, and I would just continue to send information into California as much as I could. The interesting thing is that in that same vision, I saw myself out in California right after that quake. I think it had been more than a month after. So I've learned that that's a prophetic part of my life. I usually see visions about what I'm going to be doing. So I know that right after that happens, that I'm going to be out there. And the time period was very difficult to tell. I didn't know whether it was the winter months in California or whether it was the summer. It, you know, I had no reference on time. That was the thing I've been trying to wrestle with, try to see if I can nail down a time. I do have the sequences down. I'm quite confident I have the magnitudes and damage levels.
There are times when you can actually see newspaper headlines, aren't there?
The Mexico City quake in 85 showed me the magnitude and also the damage and the loss of life.
But you haven't seen that for the Los Angeles area?
No. It's a rarity that I see a newspaper. When it's great because it's just so specific that we can pinpoint it. The earlier quakes in 92 were a result of newspapers where we're able to get the epicenter exact and the magnitude exact and the time exact.
All right, one of your predictions for 95 is Sonoma County in the Bay Areas of Northern California to be hit by a magnitude 8.5 plus or minus 0.3, it says. Now, could that vision of the twisted Golden Gate Bridge, I've never heard you say that before, could it be from that quake?
It can be because...
I mean, these are coming so close together, Gordon, that I can almost imagine the damage visually for you as you visualize it would mix together, and it would be very hard to delineate which quake had done what.
It is hard. Like some of the hurricanes of last year were, I broke it down as two events, but as it turned out, it was really one event. I thought they were two separate events, but the storm changed its direction, and
yes.
I said, well, it's got to be two events. It can't be just one event. You know, a storm just doesn't do this, then reverse its course, then heading up for Cape Hatteras and those areas, and it really was one event. It's possible that this can be one event. There will be, however, multiple quakes in California in the next 2 years. So whether this is one that encompasses the whole state or whether there are others, more will come. These are only the warning signs. This quake will only fulfill the first part of the prediction, which is three quakes begin the scenario to hit California.
I even see one predicted for within 50 miles of Portland, 7.2. And again, that could be part of this first series. I know it sounds incredible to people because these would be devastating, but it's only the beginning, isn't it?
It's just the beginning. It's like the 32-pound hailstones, and what's going on, probably as we speak now somewhere in the world. These things are just incredible. They're things that they're hard to fathom, but yet it's unfolding in front of us. We're watching our world change right in front of our eyes.
The beginning is now. Gordon, stay there. We'll be right back to you. This is CBC.
Art Bell, toll-free, west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255, 1-800-618-8255, east of the Rockies at 1-800-825-5033, 1-800-825-5033. This is the CBC Radio Network.
That is exactly what it is. My name is Art Bell. This is Coast to Coast AM. My guest is Gordon Michael Scallion. If you have missed the previous 2 hours, you've missed something very important, and I can only hope that you have one of those radio stations that at the end of the program will repeat the first hour or two, because it was a very important 2 hours of groundwork for what we are now going to begin to explore, which is indeed very frightening. If this kind of thing bothers you, please take this opportunity to turn your radio off. Please keep children out of the room. There has been an update. There is breaking news. As all of you well know, we've been closely following this hail problem around the world, beginning with reports verified of 33-pound pieces of hail falling in China. There has been a major, deadly hailstorm in Texas. The Associated Press is now reporting 7 dead and major property damage, gigantic hail falling. Gordon Michael Scallion says it is but the beginning. You're listening to a man who's got between a 79 and 87% hit or accuracy record for predictions made through his prophecy. That is an established, documentable fact. Thank God, or it would be very hard to do this program. With that as background information, Mr. Scallion has predicted a 8-point-plus earthquake for within now a narrowed area of 50 miles around Palm Springs, Sonoma County, the Bay Area of Northern California, to be hit by a magnitude 8.5 earthquake, plus or minus 3. These things are predicted to occur in this year, 1995. Remember, it doesn't have to be. But according to Gordon, well, let's ask. Gordon, it doesn't have to be, but how likely is this scenario beginning to become in your mind?
Since the first one has ran its course and went through all 4 stages, it indicates to me that the probability is high. I do not believe that we will go through 1995 without a major earthquake on the West Coast. Whether we have multiple ones or a single one remains to be seen, but I do not believe we will get through this year without at least one major quake occurring.
Have you seen more? You've seen the results, you've seen the glass on the ground from the skyscrapers. What about the social effect? You told me something that I'll never forget. You told me where I am here in Southern Nevada will be, through the first event, a place that people will flee to, along with no doubt many others, and there will be a movement of refugees or victims or the walking wounded from California that will move in mass toward my area. Is that correct?
That's what the visions indicate. The first waves create tent cities along the California-Nevada border, and literally they house literally millions of people. And it's a military operation. And then as changes increase between 95 and 98, they then move further into Nevada. And so the movement obviously is going to be eastward. And north. Those are the two areas of movement that I see. One of the visions I had showed, and it was a nighttime scene where I saw cars that were somehow who had made it east of San Bernardino. They made it that far, and also further up, you know, towards east of Fresno, that area. Somehow they were cars that were bumper to bumper just winding over the mountain into Nevada and into Phoenix, heading towards Phoenix. Thousands upon thousands of cars. It just looked like an amusement kind of a ride with just as far as I could see. I could just see the headlights and taillights of cars. Everybody trying to get out that could get out. Most were unable to and literally found themselves. You know, ended up in these what I call tent cities. And in 91, we talked about this occurring by 97. And of course, with Hurricane Andrew, we actually got a chance to see tent cities, what they really are like.
Do you Do you see numbers of dead? Do you know numbers of dead? Do you know what kind of human price is going to be paid if and when this occurs?
I do not know specific numbers, and I think that there's so many variables. The only thing that keeps me going doing what I'm doing was that when I produced this map in 82 and it was rejected by friends and peers and others, and then I reemerged it in 91 again because the visions were just so clear, and I knew initially that it would be a hard thing to present, that myself, my family would go through a lot of negativity as a result of it. But I felt that here was a snapshot of at least what one person's visions were. And whether it was entirely accurate or not, I don't think it was as important, that even if a part of it was accurate, even if 1% of it was accurate, it could be valid and it could act as an early warning sign. And so I felt that that from that point of view, it would be a valuable thing to create this future map of the United States. And and to that end, I'm beginning to see those kind of things happening. I'm seeing more people who are willing to look at it and say, well, I could see this might possibly be.
Yes. You also predict a 6.7 earthquake for Southwest Nevada. I mention that since I'm in Southwest Nevada.
Mm-hmm.
Plus or minus 0.5, and then a big one on the New Madrid Fault somewhere between 95 and 96, in other words, a little bit later possibly, but 9-point earthquake?
The number of earthquakes that are sevens and eights has not, we only have, and we're not really sure of that, as my geologist friends tell me, that of how many 9 earthquakes we've had in recorded history. We think that there are 1, perhaps 2. But even an 8 earthquake is considered staggering. We had 2 of those last year.
Correct.
I think we have to rethink. We have to start thinking in terms of quakes, not in 6 and 7 and 8, but we need to think in terms of 9, 10, 11, and more. I really believe that we're going to see...
Okay, let me stop you there, Gordon, because whenever you say that, there are always people who say that is impossible. The top of the scale is supposed to be, what, 10?
Well, there is no top of the scale. For the longest time, we've had different scales. We've had the Richter scale, and currently we're using the magnitude scale. There's various scales. In Japan, for example, their 7 quake there is their most destructive, which was Kobe. You know, that as far as quakes go, was not a huge release quake. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't what we would call an 8 or a 9 or greater.
Not what you're saying is going to happen.
Right. So there is no theoretical limit the amount of release. As you increase each point or each fractional point, the amount of energy released is phenomenal.
Yes.
I mean, we're talking things I realize that are totally unprecedented. You know, we know in past history that we've had things like Krakatoa that created massive stuff. We know with things that happened with Thera when that blew, and so we know that complete cultures were either submerged or buried under volcanic ash. So, and we know there was cataclysms that occurred 10,000 years ago. We know in history that things in nature can happen very abruptly, but we tend to see things over periods of long time, thousands of years, hundreds of thousands of years, millions of years, but yet it can happen quickly. And my visions indicate that we are in that quickening time.
Quickening, thank you. Well, all right, so these catastrophic quakes will occur, and then you say the country will sort of begin to pull itself back together again and start recovering from all of this. And I can imagine human beings are very elastic. We would begin recovering, but then comes another series, doesn't it?
The series becomes, the talk, of course, for years and years have been, California will break off and fall into the sea sometime. And
yes.
If we look at the cliffs, along part of California's coast, we can see these sheer cliffs, which indicates that at some time in history, something happened geologically. We also can see that in Nazca and different places in the world, we can see these sharp cliffs. So we know that, sometimes something occurred. I see that kind of an event. I see three phases of it. The first phase fractures California from Eureka, if you draw a line from Eureka to Bakersfield, down to the Baja. Along that line, everything to the west of the line fractures, literally, by 98-2001. By 98, that occurs. And shortly thereafter, which would be measured in months, it could be a little longer, it might even approach a year, but I doubt it, we would see a secondary fracture occur. And that secondary fracture occurs up in Newport, Oregon. So if you draw a line from Newport, Oregon, mm-hmm. Right through your state to the middle of your state of Nevada, down to Phoenix, another fracture occurs there. And that then becomes the second West Coast.
My God.
Then by 98 to 2001, it happens again for the third time. And this time, you'd have to draw a line up further north of Newport. You'd have to look at that area there, and then in Salt Lake City area, or just north of Salt Lake City, for example, becomes a part of a coastline, and east of Cheyenne into the southwest portion of Nebraska becomes a part of a coastline.
So literally, about the western third, or not quite, but near third, breaks off.
In three stages, as I have been shown in these visions, yeah. And this whole process completes itself by the year, no later than the year 2001. So we're talking
time.
About a six-year time period.
It's not much time. Well, there would be millions and millions and millions of people dead.
There can be, and it can be reduced. I think as things begin to happen, there's another magical thing going on now that I've observed. At the same time, this Earth is doing its changes. I'm noticing a major shift in consciousness. I'm noticing, because that's all I do all the time is work with visions and with other people who see visions, is that people are coming more intuitive every day. And a larger number of people are listening within. They're starting to listen, and they're just, a lot of people, I've had so many letters of people who said, you know, something told me to move here or move there, and I didn't know why.
Yes.
It didn't make sense, and then all of a sudden somebody showed me your map, and now I understand it.
We have
thousands of letters like that.
Is it like a return to Native American beliefs? In other words, this consciousness that we are part of a living Earth, that more and more people are beginning to realize that.
I believe so, and I believe that what we're seeing is the Native American tradition, and we'd have to look in other countries too, the Aborigines and the Maya, and what we're seeing is that that many of them are teachers. They're establishing some groundwork, some structure that we can follow. Their tradition. And it's been preserved through their prophecies, and that's emerging right now. I'm seeing personally a lot of that, and more and more people are coming. And if we look at the recycling movement, and we look at the people who are trying to clean up the environment. There's a large movement out there, doing that.
And there are.
Yeah, and I think it's because at the superconscious level, everything that I am seeing, like I said, even if a fraction of it is turns out to be correct. Other people are seeing the same thing. They just are interpreting it different. It's on a subconscious level with most people. Most people are going about their lives, their careers, their relationships, and they have pressing matters in their own lives. They're on their own life's path and mission and following their own star. And then there are some people like myself whose mission is to present these things in such a way that it may be of some value.
All right, let me stop everything for a moment. You have got various materials. You have your Earth Changes map, I know, that is available. And what else do you have that people can get, and how do they get it?
Okay. Probably the most there's two things that I think are important to have. One is the future map of the United States is a large wall map. It's in full color, and it shows and it gives the warning signs for these changes to happen. So the map has not changed appreciably for several years.
So it's even better than just a map. In other words, it is a map, but then within that map, it will show you what to look for before that change occurs.
Correct, and it gives you the stages, and it actually shows you with insets. This is what happens first. This is what happens second, and second to third. So you can see that. And we've been talking about the West Coast, but there's also going to be changes in the central portion of the states and the East Coast. That map, I've made it affordable for people just to get it out. It's $12 plus a shipping charge. And the other item is, to keep people informed, is our newsletter. It's a monthly newsletter. It's called the Earth Changes Report. It's mailed out first-class mail, so I want to be sure that everybody gets it, that it's not locked up in some post office because of bulk mail demands.
Right.
So it gets there. We try to get it to people so they get it anywhere in the United States around the first 2 days of the month. It updates the predictions, and it also covers other visions I've seen in other areas. It's a valuable tool, and that's $36 for the year. And those things can be, you can get those things through our toll-free number. We have operators through a service bureau. Are 24 hours. They're on duty right now, and that number is 1-800-628-7493.
7493. In other words, you've got a staff on right now.
Yeah, the staff is on 1-800-628-7493.
And the operators are probably not standing by. They're no doubt sitting there, but they're about to be jumping. So,
okay.
Let me give it again. 1-800-628-7493, and we will repeat that as the program continues. All right, Gordon, I'm going to bring you forward now to a couple of contemporary events that demand your attention. One is the horrible bombing in Oklahoma City. I mean, it was a major, catastrophic, horrible event that now, because it apparently was done internally by people in this country, is beginning to socially tear at a very important fabric. And socially, there seems to be more division, more hatred, more of all of this than I've ever seen in my life. I worry, Gordon, there may be a civil war. Do you see anything in these areas?
I've seen an extensive series of visions dealing with the infrastructure and the social climate of the United States. Several of the things that we have talked about is that terrorist activities in the United States begin in 1995, and that has begun.
Yes, it's right down here.
Yeah. I do not see civil war based on a revolt or the Constitution. That hasn't been part of my vision. I have, however, seen the United States completely changing its political structure and becoming a series of colonies. This is a real old prophecy of mine going back to the pre-90s. But
would this follow the major earth changes we've just covered? So in other words, we would form as colonies again, literally.
It would be several states joining together, and it's mostly because of earth changes and economic collapse, which I believe we're about to begin. I believe both of those things are going to occur this year, and it's going to force states to pool their resources together, and share fire departments, share police departments, schools, things of this nature, and resources. And also, I believe we'll go back to a gold standard and a commodities standard as a way of commerce. And
we'll be a much smaller country. So that's really fascinating. So you can see that future America. How far ahead, Gordon, do you think that you have seen in any vision?
I've seen it about 1,800 years out.
Wow.
And then at that time, it stopped. I don't see anything further. The Earth is still here, but
we're not.
I don't know that. The visions I basically see at that time is it's like a calmness. It's almost like I just haven't gotten that information, and I don't know what it means. I don't believe, you know, that civilization has stopped. I think it's just been the upper limit. For example, 10 years ago, I only saw to the turn of the century.
Right.
And so I think as I develop and I get more background information and more visions, it prepares me for the next series of things.
Because all right, Gordon, that's a good place to hold it. Hold it right there. Gordon Michael Scallion is my guest. You can order a copy of this program beginning now by calling 1-800-917-4278. That's 1-800-917-4278. We'll be right back.
Card line at 702-727-1295. That's 702-727-1295. First-time callers can reach Art Bell at 702-727-1222. 702-727-1222. Now, here again, Art Bell.
Here again I am, and there's more breaking news. You're just not going to believe this. You're just not going to believe it. I'm getting faxes from Denver, actually from all parts of the country right now. They're just flashing in. The news break, apparently, in the last few moments, has begun to report an earthquake in Indonesia, of all places, which I believe is right, unfortunately, in line with what Gordon Michael Scallion has been talking about. A 5.6 earthquake has just occurred, I believe, in Indonesia. All right, back now to Gordon Michael Scallion. Good heavens to Betsy, Gordon. 5.6 in Indonesia. I'm getting faxes like crazy about it. Where does that fit in?
That area, that general area, has been active. Of course, it's the Philippines is some distance to the north of that, but it's that same region. It's part of it's the Indian Ocean region. Area there, and it fits in that same cycle that we talked about earlier, but the magnitudes are lower. The ones that I've been looking for is the ones that begin that are greater than 7.
But we're in a cycle.
But we are definitely in a cycle. It's clearly in a cycle. So I would say that if it completes its pattern, then within weeks we're gonna see something. It's going to probably be in the 6 range, at least, in the West Coast. It could be larger. So I think we're in the window for that, and it's like a window within a window.
Now, Gordon, I want to do something that I didn't do last time. Because of the obvious massive changes coming that you've seen to the West Coast, let's talk a little bit about the Central and East Coast. And then for whatever you do, don't let me forget to ask about Alaska and Hawaii. But right now, Central and East, what's going to happen? When all of this change occurs on the West Coast, and then people begin fleeing, the survivors anyway, then what?
Well, there's a time delay between the West Coast. The West Coast occurs first, and then it will move to the central portion of the country, and then the east portion of the country. And what will happen is that people who have displaced, most of Californians are not native Californians. A lot of people who moved there during the high-tech times, especially in the 80s, and a lot of those have family on the East Coast and,
right,
and other parts. So those people who have family will go there. The thing that's going to drive these changes is an actual shift in the North American plate. That's actually what I see occurring. I've actually watched the thing in slow motion in multiple visions.
You've seen it happen.
Not only did I see it in a vision, but I actually heard it. I heard the cracking sound. I actually saw the sound waves being emanated traveling across the country. The Earth actually buckles in the central portion of the United States, but it fractures first in the West Coast. And then it fractures further in, as I said, towards Colorado and Nebraska area, and then on the East Coast, is the changes are kind of the last part of it. In other words, the East Coast will be affected later. And by later, I'm talking about months to at the most a year.
I have a mother who lives out on the very tip of Long Island. Toward those final changes, where would Long Island be?
We have a daughter who went to school in Long Island and was thinking of staying, and I got her to leave Long Island, so that probably will tell you. I do not see Long Island or good portions of any of the islands, Martha's Vineyard or any of the islands, surviving at all. I don't see any part of it, in fact.
All right. The final series of changes will then occur to the East Coast.
And on the mid portion, to answer that question, was
yes,
that
please.
What I see occurring is that the weather pattern changes are going to become, as they are as we speak, more drastic. But we're going to see a major shift in climate, major shift this year, and these are going to be they're going to last. They're not going to be something that's going to happen for a short time period. We're going to pretty much go to a three-season country.
And what
we're going to see is a significant melt-off is going to occur, and we're going to see rising water. Part of the reason for the rising water tables is some land is going to sink and some land is going to actually rise.
Oh, Gordon, let me stop you. I have two reports that I'd like to run by you.
Sure.
One is that the level of water wells around the Palm Springs area has been increasing. I also have another report from a larger scientific source that says the level of the oceans is now beginning to rise. Have you read any of that?
Both of those things have we have watched it. We've seen it significantly or measurably in Greece, for example, in the harbors there. But we know that there are shifts. And what's actually happening is the contour of the Earth is actually shifting. We're seeing a bulging. This magma displacement, the core displacement, is actually pushing land masses, and it's displacing water. So I have been aware of that, but it's going to occur slowly at first. We're going to see, this year we're going to see massive winds and massive flooding. Those are two things that we predicted for the year in January. A lot of wind, incredible amounts of wind and tornadoes, a record breaking this year, and those winds will be, throughout the eastern seaboard and out in the southwest. And we're seeing indications of that already. We're going to see as the St. Lawrence is going to become a major seaway, and this again occurs before the end of the century, so within the next 5 years, and perhaps earlier rather than later. And we're going to see the Great Lakes expanding significantly, so that it forces water down through the Mississippi. And it will actually divide the United States between east and west. So
you mean a water divide?
The water divide. In fact, it literally becomes two smaller land masses, if you will. We're going to have the eastern United States and the western United States. In the future, I have seen this spectacular engineering feat where they build a bridge, the longest bridge in the world, longer than we can ever imagine, that spans these distances.
That would attempt to reconnect us and unite us again.
Yes, and that I have seen that whole project completed.
Oh, how far into the future can you tell?
That occurs before the year 2012. I think the inauguration of that is 2011, where I actually saw the ribbon cutting on that. Pull that together, but it spills down so that. Louisiana, just about all of Louisiana, would be part of this new Mississippi Seaway.
Underwater.
So that would be an example.
Underwater. Louisiana will be underwater.
Right, and the eastern portion of Arkansas, and the southeastern portion of Illinois, and the northwest portion of Indiana, about 50% of Michigan actually becomes two islands. Upper Michigan and Lower Michigan is what I saw them being called in the future. The Great Lakes merge and become just one large inland sea. The southeastern portion of Texas, Houston, becomes a seaport, and it pushes it all the way back into some 50, 75 miles from San Antonio. So I give you an example down. So even the southern portion, southeastern portion of Texas becomes. And then as we look around in the Gulf of Mexico, what we find is that portions of Florida, it could be as much as 50% of Florida. That's fairly easy to see because Florida is a very flat region. But about 50% of that becomes underwater. Piece of the south of the eastern portion of South Carolina, everything pretty much maybe 20, 50 miles from Columbia, South Carolina, to the coast gets pushed in. And so we begin to lose part of the east coast, the relatively small parts, they're less than 50 miles of the east coast. Unfortunately, in our society today, in the world, most of our population is on the coast.
That's right.
So herein is where we have massive movements of people. A lot of these changes are going to give advance warnings because we're going to watch these things unfold. One of the things about our technological marvels today is it's like your show tonight is being broadcast through satellite. It's traveling around the world, and people instantly are in communication. Fax machines tell us what's going on. Video cameras show us what's going on. We watched Kobe. We watched Oklahoma. We all participate in that in some emotional and spiritual ways. And these things, are going to actually aid us in many ways. And so the variable that I see is even though these land masses are occurring, there's still, I think it's still out for judgment how we play it out. And a lot of people may very well be saved because of our technology today and because more and more people are beginning to listen within. You know, I tell people, don't listen to what I say. Watch and track what I say. And then if it makes some sense to you and it can help you, then it's a valuable thing. If not, then just put it away for another day.
Gordon, you said that you see the future world as some sort of peaceful place. Assuming all this occurs, and I'm not here, and a lot of other people aren't going to be here, is it going to be a good world, this next world, after all of this?
It's the one saving thing of for me, personally. Living with this every day is difficult at best for anybody. And so when other people share their experiences with me, I really understand what they're going through. What I do see is that if we can imagine what we would want the world to be,
yes,
it truly is what I see. And I remember from my religious training, about the coming and then the next millennium of peace and things of this nature. And I never really understood it, but I actually see it now, and I see it clearly. It's more rural, especially in the southeast part of the country.
I could imagine a new respect for Mother Earth, a new understanding of Mother Earth after events of those magnitudes.
It's different. The whole weather patterns have changed, so everything is a very temperate climate, and so the weather is totally different, and the sky is different. The colors are totally different. Hmm. It would be like you went to another world. There's obviously the population is clearly less, but I don't know how much less. But I do know that people are living 200 to 300 years, and I know that people at birth have high psychic spiritual abilities. They're just natural. I know there's, if you look in the sky, there's two suns and not one. The second one is not as large.
Two suns.
It's a two-sun system, but it's smaller, much smaller, but it's clearly, if you look in the sky during the day, and one sun is just coming up on the horizon, you can see the second one setting almost, and it's smaller. It's like a huge bright star, but it's clearly another sun.
Well, as in the motion picture 2010, a star will be born, or, yes?
Yeah.
Gordon, I've got to do this. Hawaii, what do you see for the islands?
A lot of volcanism, which is natural for that part of the world.
Correct.
But I see clearly at least 25% of that landmass given way to the sea. The biggest problem I see there is the huge tsunamis that I have seen being hit multiple times, I think 6 to 7 times, if I remember correctly.
In other words, as these West Coast changes occur, obviously.
Not just them, but Japan. I see Japan creating, thinking of Japan creating more tidal wave damage. The West Coast too, obviously, but I was aware that what was going on in Japan really created most of the damage to the world.
All right, Alaska, which of course has experienced a tragic earthquake in its not too distant past. What will happen there?
Alaska stays pretty much the same. There's an inland sea that develops inside of it, so it does lose some of its landmass because of the rising water. But most of northern Canada, and good portions of the central portion of the United States, but Canada north and including good portions of Alaska remain geophysically stable.
Mm-hmm. So if you were to look at what you see for the future of this country, and you wanted to move to one of the safest places, the center of what will be fairly geologically stable, something you could live through, where would you go?
Well, I'm there. I could live anywhere in the world, and I've chosen this area. The reason, and there's many areas in my future map of the United States. If you look at the contours, and I suggest that people take about a 50 to 100 mile radius inside of that, the lines that I put, what the new coastline is like, and find places in there. The southeast portion of the United States is excellent. Some of the best. Portions of Ohio, West Virginia, North Carolina, and South Carolina, mostly, again, away from the coastline. Those are good areas, good portions. So that's a dynamic area. Portions of Pennsylvania are dynamic areas. Nebraska and Kansas are going to be very significant, as will Iowa. New Mexico itself is an area that's it's probably going to expand, and in many ways, it's going to become the new entertainment capital very soon. In fact, Hollywood will move there.
Gordon, you can almost close your eyes, and as you picture the fracture you talk about in the big one in the center of the United States, you can easily see why what you're saying would occur to the coasts would occur. I can picture that in my mind. Gordon, stay right where you are. Gordon Michael Scallion is my guest. It's a rough message. If you want more, there'll be more in a moment.
AM with Art Bell, live on the CBC Radio Network. To call the show toll-free from across the nation, dial 1-800-618-8255. That's 1-800-618-8255. The wildcard direct lines are area code 702-727-1295. That's 702-727-1295. And if you've never called the show, try the first-time caller line at 702-727-1222. Anybody east of the Rocky Mountains can use the first-time caller line at 702-727-1222. When your call is answered, please turn your radio down. Each caller will be allowed up to 3 minutes, giving more listeners a chance to join in. And now, enjoy Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
Thank you.
right, back down to Gordon Michael Scott. Gordon, this news is beginning to freak me out a little. This is a building story down in Texas. Softball-sized hail is gigantic hail. It's not as big as the 33-pound stuff in China, but there's beginning to be too much of this, and it does appear to be the beginning of something new.
Yeah, it's the pattern. You know, we've seen it begin with the floods, you know, the Mississippi floods. We've watched the hurricanes. This year is going to be devastating with hurricanes and tornadoes. Just devastating. And in Texas, it's getting hit very hard, and has been this year, and yet more is to come, at least with wind. So it is another indication. It's another part of that prophecy that. That so many futurists out there have been stating for years that when weather pattern changes become erratic and dynamic, that would indicate that we're into the final, you know, the final days when greater changes will follow with the Earth upheaval. And so, you know, we've entered that stage, and we can just we will learn to expect that this will be happening on an ongoing basis.
All right, Gordon, I want to start answering some telephone calls. As you know, they've all been full for hours. Let's try it. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Gordon Michael Scallion. Hi.
Hi, how you doing?
Okay, where are you?
I'm in New Orleans.
Yes, sir.
I was wondering about the sun. You said there's going to be two suns. Will the sun split, or will it just... Where will the other sun come from?
I've done an article on it in our newsletter, past issue. If you want all the details, it's available there. But generally, what I've seen in the vision is that another sun moves. The Earth itself doesn't move into another orbit, but another sun moves. In the vision, it was like it just appeared. But I was aware that it had moved outside of our system and entered into our system, and it literally appeared overnight. And again, you have to remember that this would be like a star. Like you could imagine at night looking at the brightest star you can see. It would be like that during the day. It would be clearly visible, and then you would know that this is a tiny another sun, but it would be clearly there.
How
it happens and the whole dynamics of that is another matter entirely, but it comes from outside of our system.
Really?
All right, sir. Thank you. Fascinating. First-time caller line. You're on the air with Gordon Michael Scallion.
Hello.
Hello, sir. Where are you?
I'm Joe in Sonoma County.
Sonoma, yes.
And I have his future map of the United States, and it doesn't show anything around the United States. And I'm wondering if he's going to come out with a map of the world, changes that are going to be happening all over the world.
Well, now there's a very good question. You've given us a map of our country, Gordon. What about the world?
That's probably one of the top three questions that's asked to me. What I have been doing is producing tapes on each continent as I get enough information. I'm assuming that because I live in the United States and traveling here that I get the deepest clarity. I have I wait until I see a vision occur so many times that I'm sure that it's a stable vision. I'm very cautious before I release any information. And in many places in the world, I have not seen that kind of specific vision. I have done audio tapes on the world. They're available. To do the map, the first map took so many years, and I find that my schedule is such now that I'm working 18 hours a day, 7 days a week. It's hard to put that together. I have no plans at this stage to do it. My first emphasis right now is to focus on what I can do for this country, and I'm trusting that other futurists in other countries will be somehow guided to do what they have to do.
All right, Gordon, if you could snap, this is probably a hard question, but if you could snap your fingers right now and make all of this, all of the visions, stop, would you?
At this at this stage, I've never thought of that, but I would say that I would do it if I felt that there was nothing further that I was going to see that would be helpful, and then I would say yes. Every day that goes by, I actually almost say a prayer that says, you know, I don't want to see any more visions, stop this. And then after, you know, a few hours go by, or I wake up in the morning after having said that before I went to bed,
yes.
I say, well, you know, what if I see another piece that could be helpful? And then I find myself continuing on. So I'm in an inner battle with myself constantly. If it's helpful, then I'll do it. And if it stops and I no longer see visions, then it can go away. I would do that. I would say yes, let it go away.
All right. Well, west of the Rockies, you're on the air with Gordon Michael Scallion. Hello.
Hello. This is Daniel in Cogoland.
Yes.
Hello, Daniel.
That would be San Diego.
Yes. I was wondering, I've read the account that George Washington had his vision recorded in the Library of Congress about the where he foresaw the destruction of America by foreign armies, and I was wondering if you envisioned any invasions by, you know, America being invaded.
Interesting question.
Mm-hmm. I've seen extensive visions on the United States, as I said earlier, on the geopolitical structure, and I have I've never seen a vision. Most of the chaos and the disruption that I have seen comes from within our country and not from without our country. The rest of the world is going to have problems much more severe than we are. Even though the changes I'm speaking of is obviously unbelievable and dramatic, cataclysmic, the rest of the world has a much harder time. So they're going to be dealing with their own war that I believe has begun in Europe, which will then spread to the Middle East and throughout Africa. So I don't see that. I have never seen a vision where there were foreign troops in here, but I do see a crisis in our own country and divisions in our country. I do see that.
That may be starting now. Gordon, because of your accuracy record, because of the amount of respect you have, and because you're saying the kinds of things you're saying now, you must really have terrible, terrible struggles. I mean, to go public with this must have been a gut-wrencher.
Yeah, it was something that I would, on a conscious level, I would have never done this. There are too many other things that I would have liked to have done, and still have those feelings, other things. But it was, you know, what happens is that when you start to see these visions and you see how it disrupts people's lives. I mean, Oklahoma was a classic case for me. I mean, the empathy that Cynthia and I felt, and just watching that thing unfold, and then also seeing the outpouring and the compassion and the psychic link that went on with the millions of people who were tuning in, or probably billions of people in the world tuning in, I see more of that occurring. I see more of those kind of connections, and it's that those kinds of connections that I see that tells me that as difficult as it may be, that there's still some really positive things that they come out of it. Anytime there's a crisis, you know, a relationship falls apart or you lose a job, you know, it gives you an opportunity. And I think we're going to be faced with those same kinds of opportunities.
Lots,
I'm faced with them all the time.
Lots of opportunities. That's a positive way to look at it. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Gordon Michael Scallion. Where are you, please?
I'm in Charleston, South Carolina. This
Charles.
Is Jack.
Oh, yes.
Mr. Scallion, you mentioned that when you were first in the hospital, when you saw the spheres, that you also saw symbols.
Yes.
Do you know someone named Deanna Emerson and Keith? And I don't know where I'm going with this. She has studied, you know, the supposed face on Mars and symbols on that, and also on various parts on the Earth. And I was wondering if you're familiar with her, if any of your symbols that you saw are the same as the symbol she is.
Oren, let me add to that a little bit. Thanks for the call, sir. Have you ever been able to decipher, or has anybody, the symbols that you saw?
I have been able to figure some of them out. This year, in January, I was visions told me that I needed to clear my calendar and go to Egypt. And when I went to Egypt, I saw the symbols, some of the symbols that I actually saw.
Really?
When I was in the Great Pyramid, and internal to it, I had all kinds of incredible experiences. In fact, it was probably, next to losing my voice, that was the next most dynamic thing that ever happened to me in my life.
Can you tell us some about the pyramids? I'm fascinated. Many people are fascinated by them, and I didn't realize you'd had that experience, so tell us.
Mm-hmm. The Great Pyramid is one of the oldest structures, and when I was there, I actually had a chance to watch it in a vision. Instead of vision being a few seconds like it normally is, I watched a vision that lasted for probably 15 minutes at a time, and I actually watched the construction. I watched the whole land, and
you watched the construction.
I actually watched the construction of it.
How? How?
It's like when I was watching a vision, instead of seeing three screens, I was looking at one screen, and then the next thing I knew is I heard a pop sound, loud pop.
Yes.
And the next thing I knew is that I was inside the vision. I no longer was watching it with my inner mind's eye, you know, like we would imagine something. I was actually
part of it,
physically there, and I could hear the people, and I could hear the chanting that was going on. I could see these prehistoric birds that were flying in the air.
Wow.
It was such a dynamic thing that the last three issues of the Earth Changes Report, I share that whole experience so that I felt that other people might recall it to their subconscious mind. But it was a structure that was built, and it was built over 12,000 years ago, and it was built as a form of a time machine. It was a large machine. Now, that's much different than the other pyramids that were built as tombs. This one wasn't. And a cataclysm occurred, a major cataclysm similar to what we're going through right now occurred, and part of the reason of building that structure was to foretell things that were going to happen around the year 2000.
Uh-huh. And so then there is power in pyramids.
There is power in specific pyramids. My auric vision of looking at pyramid hats and things of this nature, I have not seen the emanations of energy that I see when I look at the physical pyramids. The physical pyramid shapes definitely emit all forms of energy, inside and out.
This may sound silly, but they recently built a casino in Las Vegas that is the biggest pyramid I've ever seen. Now, I've not been to Egypt, but it is definitely pyramidal, and a lot of things occurred during its construction that were very odd. Quite a number of people died, and a lot of people had a lot of things to say about, what is the power of a pyramid?
I'm not sure, I'm not aware of what happened in Nevada, but I can only speak about what happened with my experience in Egypt at the Giza Plateau. The pyramid, the specific pyramid, Giza pyramid, or also called Cheops, is 2,300,000 blocks, and each block weighing almost as much as an automobile. And they're manufactured with a precision, a jeweler's precision. It's an incredible structure. And it does two things that I observe with my vision. One is it structures magnetic fields. I actually watch the fields themselves contour in. It actually extends it. The second thing I observed, it's a collector. It collects energy from it, and I could see the energy just emanating, so I would call it a cosmic energy. It's life force, prana force, whatever we want to call it.
Is that energy what is manifesting the change in the magnetic field?
No, I think it's a separate thing that goes on. I think the piezoelectric effect of all of the pressure of all of the granite stones and the limestone stones creates the basic structure of it, and then I think the shape of it and its orientation adds to it. It's a combination of forces. Any one force by itself would not function properly. You could build a pyramid out of something else, and you would not get the same shape. You would have some effect, but not the effect designers wanted for that one.
You say you saw its construction.
Yes.
It seems impossible that human beings could have constructed that particular pyramid. I've heard that again and again. So if you saw how it was done, how was it done?
The stones themselves were quarried on site, many of them. If you were to remove the pyramid from its base, what you would find is in the center of it is passageways that descend down 400 or 500 feet deep. So underneath the pyramid, there's all kinds of cutting that was done, not only there, but in and around the plateau. So a lot of the limestone came right from that site. I was watching them cut holes, and they used a form of a laser is the only way I could describe it, because it was a loud humming sound and a very sharp a light that would occur at the stone, but between the instrument and the stone, I didn't observe any light, but when it hit the stone, it was a light. So they actually cut these stones from using a laser technology.
But that implies a technological civilization that did not exist, and that implies that there have been previous civilizations on this very earth, really, that have come and gone. Yes?
Yeah.
No?
Yeah, for me, you know, and I have a technical background, so I tend to look at things a little differently. And when if you go into that pyramid, and I was there, I actually wondered how many Egyptologists actually have gone inside and spent the kind of time I did inside of the Great Pyramid. Because if you went to the Grand Gallery there and observed the magnificence of this gallery, 30 feet high, stones weighing up to 50 tons, polished, perfectly straight. You can see tracks that have been cut and grooved in the thing. Perfect. I mean, everything is perfect. And you look at this thing and you say, we could not construct that today. The Japanese tried to do a scale model there right on the plateau and gave up.
I heard that, yes.
Yeah. They used everything. Technology is the whole nine yards, and they could not do it.
Gordon, stand by. God, this is fascinating stuff. A lot of new stuff. If you would like to order a copy of this program, please be patient. The lines, of course, are jammed, but they are open 24 hours a day throughout the weekend and the week. The number is 1-800-917-4278. 1-800-917-4278. We'll be right back. Question, Gordon. Please ask Gordon. After the geologic fall of the West Coast and then really the rest of the country, what will be the major military world power? Will there be one? And also, and this is very important, contamination. We've got stockpiles of chemical, biological, and nuclear weapons. Other countries do as well. What will happen to all of this stuff?
Unfortunately, the things that that we've done to the earth and the things that we have misused are going to come back to haunt us. On the nuclear issue first, I've been forecasting another tragedy, a nuclear disaster in this country within the next couple of years.
Can you tell us where?
I don't know. The only thing I saw in the vision is that I was on the other side of the Rockies. In fact, I was at the foothills of the Rockies looking east. So the only thing that I knew from the vision was that it was somewhere east of the Rockies.
Okay.
And what it did, however, is it immediately started, and other things have happened, like the major quakes have been forecasting. And so the plants across the country begin to shut down like dominoes. Literally shut down. Most of the plants are old and are in trouble right now anyway. But this kind of does it. And there's an amazing breakthrough in technology that I believe has already been developed, and I think it's being used, but I think it will surface for general use. And that's a way to take our nuclear stockpile, and it neutralizes it. It's an incredible technology, and I've seen a vision of that. So the nuclear waste gets cleaned up very, very quickly as a result of this this plant that they built to do that, and they built several of them.
Hmm.
The the chemicals and many of those things, that's another story. I see much of the water being tainted. Most of the problems I see is that salt water leaches into freshwater systems. The water is going to be the number one prime problem. It will be the price of gold currently, and that's what we're going to see here.
Water worth the price of gold.
Right. I mean, I wouldn't have believed 10 years ago that, buying a bottle of water for a couple of dollars.
That's true.
It's going to increase that much. So we're going to have problems. We solve some of the problems. Other of the problems are going to be difficult. Fresh drinking water is going to be a major problem. There will be some technology that will come out, filtration systems. There'll be a lot of that that will be forced out. We already have these technologies.
It would have to. One other question. We now have AIDS. We have other things that are attacking us. We have Ebola, Zaire, and Ebola, several other varieties, things that are attacking human beings, diseases, the flesh eaters, the rest of it, that are occurring now on a scale that rivals the increase in activity in every other area we've talked about. What's going on with disease?
Our whole system is breaking down. Our immune systems are breaking down. Many of the diseases that we have now are what I call diseases of consciousness. We're finding that we have so altered our food source, and that's one of the major things. When I look at the vibrational colors from foods, I can clearly see the difference between, you know, an organically grown tomato, for example, and one off of the shelf, you know, that was flown in.
Yes.
The difference is that there's very little life force in it, so it's amazing that we're able to even sustain ourselves. And yet we're in a society that if we live in a city, we can't very well go and have big garden plots to serve our whole family. There are things that we can do, though. But in either case, I see the changing in the earth itself, the magnetic forces, all the chemicals we've pumped into the air, the pollution, the heavy positive ionization of the atmosphere. I see all of that as having broken our systems down, and I'm here just speaking about the physical body. Now, if I look and start talking about the subtle bodies that I see, the things that I see that the science doesn't accept yet, I see those bodies in much worse shape. When the physical body finally breaks down, it's happened at other levels first. It happens at the mental level and the subtle bodies first. And so if you're a healer and you tend to, if you want to see where the cause is coming from and you want to see the stages of it, you look at the subtle bodies. It's going to continue, and these diseases and plagues will continue, and there's going to be seven that I forecast in 91 that we would see in the 90s. There'll be seven plagues that will occur. The positive side of this, if there can be, is that at the turn of the century, in the year 2002, when I looked there, most of the diseases that we had are gone. Like AIDS is totally gone.
Hmm.
And it goes away in a snap, and it's a result of the change in magnetic field of the Earth. Its frequency and its density changes, and it simply eradicates most of the diseases. It creates new difficulties for us, of course, as we would imagine. But AIDS in particular just simply vanishes.
But that will be then, and this, of course, is now. And right now, there is there's a large combination of things that we are doing, or almost everything we're doing, that is attacking our immune system.
That is what I see. And I see our subtle bodies being totally drained. They're just being drained from environmental and what I call, just psychic pollution.
All right. Very quickly, back to the phones. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Gordon Michael Scallion. Hello.
Yes, hi, this is Neil from Springfield, Illinois.
Yes, sir.
I was wondering, Gordon, do you see any extraterrestrials visiting the planet within the next 50 years? And when do you think that great calm is going to occur?
All right. Many people have questions about that. Things that are seen in the sky, UFOs, that is part of the same quickening. There's more and more of that going on down in Mexico. hundreds of thousands of people have been having sightings. Gordon, do you have any comment on all of that?
I believe before this year is out, we will see broadcasts, and we will have knowledge of the existence of other life, and there, it will no longer be a question.
Wow.
There will, the only questions will be is that it's been fabricated by government agencies. I mean, we'll go into that normal cycle of denial of anything that changes.
Oh, to prove what you just said, the bombing in Oklahoma City, there's a group of people out there right now, Gordon, that are saying the government blew up its own building, its own people. They believe that.
I did not specifically see the Oklahoma in a vision. We did, but it was interesting that several weeks before, I did have a vision that Cynthia and I talked about, and I didn't understand it. But what it was is it was a large explosion, and then I saw a clock, and the clock ticked away, and when it got to the 10-second mark, there was a second explosion. And then immediately I saw this image played itself again the first time, the first explosion, and then I saw it was an echo wave that came back down. And it made no sense, and so we didn't report it on our hotline because unless I have the specifics of it, I just don't do it. And then after Oklahoma, as soon as I heard about Oklahoma, immediately that vision snapped back, and I said, I think this is what may have occurred. This is what may be with the second, because there was two seismic recordings that
it's
occurred spaced about, I think it was 10 seconds apart, but it was due to a single explosion. And the visions that I have seen since then indicate to me that it clearly was a terrorist act.
Well, yes, but my point was that, as you were pointing out, a lot of people, I mean, you've made an incredible statement that by the end of the year their presence will be known, and a lot of people will think it is the government, as
right.
They have thought it's the government in Oklahoma City.
Right.
That's remarkable. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Gordon Michael Scallion. Where are you calling from, please?
50 miles north of New Madrid, Missouri.
All right.
Ground zero.
Yeah, ground zero. You're on the air, sir. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was wondering if you foresee this quake being... Could you correlate the damage to the one that happened in the early 1800s here? You know, the river ran backwards. There were temporary falls on it.
I think...
Whole towns disappeared.
Yeah. We'll see many of the similar things. The thing, of course, that's different is that the industrialization and the population base is so different than it was back then. What I see causing this quake is different. I see a buckling in the middle of the country. Anytime we see activity in the Indian Ocean region, we can expect that we'll see significant activity in the Indian Ocean. We'll see significant activity in the middle to the western part of the United States. There's a cycle there that I've seen in my vision. And we will see, we'll actually see some water supplies totally just disappear. So I've seen that vision, they just dried away. And I've actually seen land masses in some areas being shifted up where elevations will shift several hundreds of feet in some areas. Some hills will actually come down, others will come up. So this is a major land bulge or displacement. It's like boiling water where you see a bubble come up. It rises up out of the ground and then it just collapses back down on itself.
On the wild card line, you're on the air with Gordon Michael Scallion. Hi.
Hi, Art. This is Martin in Seattle, Como Country.
Yes, Martin.
My question for Mr. Scallion has to do with some possible correlations with other futurist-type organizations out there. I know that you've interviewed Lori Toy and
yes.
had her map
yes.
of the future of America, and also you've stated that you wanted to interview Elizabeth Clare Prophet and the prophecies that are coming through her.
Yes.
My question for Mr. Scallion is, has he perhaps networked with some of these other organizations or compared his work to see some interesting correlations?
Yes, that is a good question. And what about that, Gordon? There are other people doing significant work. You may be, to me, you are the most significant of those people. But there are others, and how does the work correlate?
What we're seeing is that there are many people who are now receiving information. As we get closer to events, more and more people will see the event because the psychic image gets stronger.
Mm-hmm.
And there's correlations. I've had people send me, I currently have about 10 different maps from 10 different people who don't know each other, and I didn't know these people, but they're from around the world, Russia, New Zealand, and they've sent me copies of their work, and unbeknownst to me or each other, there's similarities. And what we see is that the cookie cutter is very similar. If we look at it as a cookie cutter, we're seeing similar events. We may vary where we see the exact lines go. And what I see is that it's the pattern that we're all seeing. We're all kind of talking from the same script now. That
we really are. It's true.
We're seeing major weather changes, and we're seeing geographical changes. Now, as far as networking, I've done something significant. We've been testing this for a year. In fact, anybody who's a current Earth Changes Report subscriber will receive notification of this in the June issue. We have actually created a massive database network system that operates with a regular telephone. Anybody with a telephone anywhere in the world will be able to call in a prediction. Not just mine, but anybody can predict it. And by using a simple phone, they can register it. If at 3 o'clock in the morning they get a vision, and these don't have to be people who are well known. They can just be, because I think most people who get visions tend to want to keep it quiet.
Sure.
They're afraid to even admit it to themselves.
Yes.
But they can call this in, and this database is updated on an hourly basis and tabulated. And any time that we get a consensus of something's going to happen, we post it on this phone network as a early warning system.
Oh, that's fascinating.
And that will include the people who are well-known futurists and as well as novices. Anybody can participate. The more people who participate, the more data that we're going to get.
Well, you say we're all in the same playbook. Now, obviously, you've already begun this. How do what you get from that when there is a consensus, how does that seem to compare to what you see?
If I understand your question correctly...
Well, in other words, once a consensus is reached through a massive number of calls...
Right.
And you're then able to compare that to what you see, how much correlation is there?
Well, it may not be the same. Most of my forecasts and predictions have already been published. They're already out there for a long time period. Where we start this... This system begins in June.
Oh, okay.
We've been testing it. The things that we've been testing is kind of a beta test, working with some known futurists predominantly, and we have had some novices. What I have found with a small number of base of people, that there were only a few out of the base. We only had a base of 100 in the test.
Yes.
And we only found 2 out of the 100 that were able to forecast an event. Part of the problem we had back then is that we didn't have a way of instantaneously having... People would have had to write in their forecast, and then we would enter it into a computer. And we found that time delay just didn't work because so much of this is impulsive things.
Sure.
And once going to the telephone, it makes it easy. The predictions that did come in... correlated very closely with predictions that I had made for long term.
That was the question. All right, look, I've already held you 4 hours, and I think for Gordon Michael Scallion, that may be a record breaker. I've got one more hour of show, and in this next hour, I had planned to tell them, I assume you must go here at the top of the hour, is that
yes,
correct?
Yes, I do.
I sent you, and I don't want to really discuss it, Gordon, right now, but I sent you some fairly frightening material that was sent to me. You know what I'm talking about.
Yes, I do.
And for a long time, I refused to discuss it on the air. I talked to USGS. Since some of those predictions, fortunately, have not occurred, I'm going to tell the audience that whole story in the next hour. With the remaining moments we have, tell people how they get the Earth Changes Report, how they get the map, and any other materials. Give the number out again.
Okay. There's a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week, 800 line. They can call toll-free, 1-800-628-7493. The items that I think of the things that we have, probably the most important thing to have is the future map of the United States. It's $12 plus a postage charge. To keep updated on what we're doing, our forecast, and how you can plug into this new network, this phone network. Phone network, by the way, will also give daily earthquake activity in the world and a weekly summary. And so you'll be able to keep informed about what's actually happening. And there's other things that it's going to offer. It's going to offer resources and networking. And all you need is a telephone. You don't need a computer or anything.
Okay.
And that'll be announced in the Earth Changes report. And that number again is 1-800-628-7493.
For the individual, just a couple of more words, one more moment. For anybody out there, any individual person, what do you advise them?
The most important thing you can do today is really learn to trust within. You have to learn to trust the gut feeling. Business people will say, I bought that land because it was a gut feeling. I bought that stock because it was a gut feeling. I moved out here on a gut. That gut is intuition. The two things that I see that are going to make a difference for people to get through these times is, one, is you're going to really have to start trusting your intuition, absorb everything you get out there, and then in your quiet space, sort out based on your feelings of what's real and what's not real.
In other words, listen to yourself.
Listen to yourself. And the other thing is learn to become part of your community. Community is going to what's going to make the difference when difficult times come.
Gordon, I appreciate the world record interview. As always, you're great to interview. This has been a classic. Gordon, thank you.
You're welcome.
Good night.
Good night.
Gordon Michael Scallion. Well, if that wasn't a classic 4 hours, there is no such thing.